Welcome to Hedge Fund Tips with Tom Hayes. I'm Tom Hayes, and this is your 232nd podcast videocast episode for the week ending March 28th, 2024. Happy Easter and Passover for everyone who celebrate coming up this weekend. I'm coming to you live from Webster, New York. We are at the Eastern Zone Championships. Mimi, yesterday was the first day. Mimi got a zone cut for her 500 freestyle, came in at 534.33, which was awesome. So now she has a long course zone cut for 500 free and two back. This is from last week in Riverside, California, actually over the weekend with her Olympic development program. Regionals, she did not go through to the nationals. They only took three kids and they were towards the top end, 13 and 14 year old. She's 11. Absolutely incredible time. They had some stiff competition. They won one out of four. But you have to keep in mind for Connecticut, it's a wider range of ages, whereas in California, they have huge pools. So all the teams, you know, our blended mean age was probably 12 and a half, and their blended mean age was probably 14. And little Mimi at 11 was holding her own. So it was a great, great weekend, great learning experience. Then we went to Laguna Beach afterwards. It was a little cold out in California over the weekend, but we had a blast. And this is from Yahoo on Tuesday over at 770 Broadway. That's their new studio, which is pretty cool. That's their production booth there with all the TVs. And that's another photo there in Laguna Beach at a place called The Deck, which was pretty awesome. I had Mimi pick it out on the way. I said, just find the best seafood restaurant you want to go to in Laguna Beach. And she picked a great one right on the water there. Another picture. And another picture. So that's that. I'm in Webster, New York, which is right next to the middle of nowhere. So actually, it's not far from Rochester, New York, about 15 minutes. I don't think I have any clients up here, but if I have podcast listeners who are potential clients and you want to meet for a coffee over the next couple of days, we're here till Saturday. Next week, I will be in Aventura, Florida, which is basically Miami, Monday through Friday. Monday through Wednesday, any existing or potential clients that want to meet, probably around dinner time, either for dinner or for a coffee or something. Late day, Monday through Wednesday, I will be available. On Thursday, late day, Pompano Beach for dinner or coffee. And on Friday, Friday's going to be tough. It would have to probably be meet you at the Miami airport at night. So leaving that aside, love to always meet with people in person. I enjoy that very much. And let's get down to it. First, I want to thank Charles Payne, Nick Palazzo, and Kayla Aristivo for having me on Fox Business on Tuesday. We got to cover a lot of great stuff, some picks, some market outlook. So we're going to listen in.
All right. So my next guest, really, it's his forte is finding these diamonds in a rough, but he also watches the market minute to minute as well. I want to bring in Great Hill Capital Chairman Thomas Hayes. You also have the on Twitter, the hedge fund website that I a Twitter site that I love to go to. You know, one of the things I saw in there, you had the thing about the indicator. One of the indicators of the day was the NASDAQ advanced decline, which ironically, Gary Kaltbaum was on the show yesterday, and that was one of the indicators that he also mentioned as well. What's so important about this? Why does that resonate so much?
Well, we actually look at dozens of indicators. Sure. This is one that we look on a very short-term basis. We use it a little differently than most people use it. So on a day-to-day basis, when we see that get extreme to plus 500, plus 1,000, then we start to say, okay, maybe we're going to take a little breather here in the short term. So we want to be putting money to work when it's extremely stretched in those quality names like you spoke to, the kind of diamonds in the rough for the long term. So it helps us with entry points.
Now, 52-week highs, you also look at those as well. Are you looking for, is that a momentum gauge as well to a degree?
Well, what we're trying to find is a broadening of the market to understand the health of the market. Okay, so when we see more companies making new highs, we're starting to see more participation across many different sectors. That gives us confidence to generally allocate money. But then we take the other side where we look for what hasn't yet moved and what's
right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's interesting. So you like the idea that more names are moving, greater confidence, rotation, broadening of the rally. But you also are looking at these names who are not necessarily participating in that yet.
Yeah. What's next? Where's the puck going? Not where it is. So we know the puck is moving, but where's it going next? And we don't like chasing shiny objects, as you know. We kind of like go into the places where no one's looking, and then we get involved. And then when everyone gets excited about it, that's when we start peeling
off.
Let's
talk about a couple of them. You like Boeing here. You've actually started buying around $80.
Yeah, you know, this is the least amount of analysis we've done in a long time. This wasn't a hard one. This thing sold off pretty hard the last 2 weeks. We bought a little bit in the high 179s, a little bit in the mid 180s. Our basis 183, got up to like 190 and changed. Now they just downgraded the credit today, Murphy's Law. But, you know, at the end of the day, they delivered 528 planes last year. They've got a 5,600 backlog. So if you're Southwest, you can say, oh, we're going to Airbus, but you're going to be waiting 20 years for your next new plane.
You know, I had this as a never sell stock for 10 years, and then those back-to-back disasters. My first red flag was the way management handled it.
Yeah.
It was almost a sort of almost indifference. It was really cold-blooded.
Yeah.
This was a $383 stock. So, I mean, you say, you know, if Boeing themselves, they put on their website, what I love is like over the next 20 years, X amount of planes are going to be, there's going to be like 50 cities we never heard of, and most of them in China, right? The demand is there. It's just the execution.
Yeah.
Disney also. Disney's another one.
Disney's not hard. I mean, Disney fell down to 90, even in the 80s we were picking up. So we own, I think, low 90s basis. Now you've got some activists involved that accelerates the turnaround story. But this happened actually in the mid-80s. The Bass family came in when the parks were tired. The content, they had to find a new way to sell it. In the 80s and 90s, they used VHS tapes. Now they're using Disney Plus. They're using the bundles. So whether it's Nelson Peltz or Value Act helped Spotify with their subscription package. It helped New York Times turn around their subscription package. So they're going to be helpful. I think Peltz has some good ideas. But
whether Peltz wins or not, I think management knows they're on notice. And they'll probably turn this thing around. They should. They've got all the pieces, but this is a stock. It was 197, so a lot of people out there are like, I'm getting, not long ago, it was at a 9-year low.
Yeah.
I got less than a minute to go. Stanley Works.
Stanley Black & Decker. Okay, so you got tools. So you've got the turnaround Inflation Reduction Act. You got construction coming back. You got new homes.
So you got the macro issue.
Yeah. So why is the thing down 55%? They over inventoried during COVID. They've spent the last 7 quarters working down those inventories. Now management's got a clear plan in place to take $2 billion of costs out of this business.
The same management team.
Yeah. They are ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. Okay. They've taken $1 billion out. They're going to have $2 billion by 2025. That's $13 a share. Average historic multiple 16 times. That puts a 200 on it. It's like a $90 stock right now. So it's going to take again 24, 36, 48 months, but 50, 100% returns over 2-3 years is a good thing.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, it's a breath of fresh air to have someone come in and talk about owning a stock for more than 2 days.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, man. All right, folks. Don't forget, I will be hosting Unbreakable Investors.
And we're back. Then I went immediately from Fox to Yahoo Finance Studios and want to thank Haley Marks, Kathleen Welch, Akiko Fujita, and Josh Lipton for having me on. This was an interesting segment with Nancy Tengler following up on some picks we made in December, market outlook, some new picks, and a lot of great information. So we're going to listen in.
What's been a record-setting start to 2024? We are revisiting the calls made at the end of last year to see which hold up and which are in need of repositioning in the Yahoo Finance playbook. Joining us today is Thomas Hayes, Great Hill Capital Chairman and Managing Member, and Nancy Tengler, Laffer Tengler Investment CEO and CIO. Nancy, let's start with you, because back in December, you recommended investors buy Broadcom for its exposure to the AI rally, calling it the poor man's NVIDIA. But do you still stand by that call?
Yeah, I've been pretty pleased with it, Akiko. I mean, the stock pulled back on earnings, but then they had an investor day, and then investors came away with a clearer picture about the future. I think on any pullbacks, you want to own this stock if you don't already own it. Strong dividend growth, a capital allocation plan that really rewards shareholders, and a management team that has been able to make major acquisitions and then rationalize them very quickly and very well. And then, of course, the AI component, which is will continue to grow.
And Thomas, let's bring you in here as well. You know, you look at this market, Thomas, this kind of just steady climb higher. I'm just curious, you know, how has your investment strategy, if at all, changed so far this year?
Well, we've been publicly bullish nonstop for a year and a half, and we've recently become more cautious. We're up 17 out of the last 21 weeks, no 2% pullback in the last 100 trading days. So in recent weeks, we put on a 2% hedge, 1% put spreads on the S&P, 1% put spreads on the semiconductor index, and 98% long. So if we're right, those have an expected value of 5x each, so we'll create 10% of new capital. If we're wrong, we think there's enough beta in the portfolio that even that cost of 2% will get eaten by outperformance to the S&P. So, but you know, if you look at mixed messages. Margin levels are down. They're not really super elevated. So a big correction of 10%, I don't think that's in the cards. I think more like a 3 to 8% would be kind of a normal, healthy thing to see, and sector rotation happening under the surface like Jared was talking about.
Why single out semiconductors and S&P specifically?
I'm looking for what's a little bit stretched, where the multiples are stretched, where a lot of people are chasing the shiny objects. All the people that were bearish, you know, we flipped all the bears. You know the names who have been bearish for a year and a half, and now they're all flipping. And where are they flipping to? They're getting excited about stocks that have already run up 100% plus. And we like to skate to where the puck is going, not to where it already has gone.
And Nancy, I'm going to bring you here as well. When you talk to your clients, Nancy, and they're asking you what are some of the risks that are really on your radar right now, what do you tell them? Is it valuation, seasonality? What are you thinking about?
Well, so Josh, we're long-term investors, and we tend to move at glacial speed, but we were adding, as you know, we've talked about this, to tech and consumer discretionary in October of 2022. And then again, after trimming them in 2023, we were adding to back to some of the names in October. And then we started broadening out the portfolio, of last year. We started broadening out the portfolio, really to have the improvement in some of the names that we've seen in healthcare, financials, some of the more cyclical names were overweight industrials. But my biggest concern is that the Fed seems to be, walking away from their data dependence and put quotes around that that they've had in the past. And it seems they're determined to cut. And so we've drawn an analogy to the 90s. We think you can have higher inflation, but not materially higher. And so that's my worry, that we get a surge in inflation because the Fed is too easy. But we've drawn the analogy to the 90s, and we think that's still accurate. Higher inflation and higher interest rates can coexist with strong stock prices. And that's what we had in the 90s when I was a young portfolio manager. And I think we're going to see that again due to productivity. So I'm not running away from tech. We're just broadening out, because I think you want to own the old economy companies that are embracing the digital revolution, generative AI, cloud computing, and then the suppliers of those picks and shovels in that space.
Thomas, I see you nodding your head as Nancy sort of makes her case here. I mean, you recommended investors buy Baxter, but Skip Eli Lilly the last time we were on. How has that assessment changed, or has it changed beyond that?
Still the same. They call me Turnaround Tom. I like buying out of favor high-quality businesses. Baxter is one of those. It got smashed because of over-inventorying, absorbing the Hillrom acquisition, and then, of course, the crescendo was in the fall, GLP-1s. Mm-hmm. No one was ever going to need a medical procedure again, and all that basket flushed out in October. So we took advantage of that. It's up 15%, give or take, since, a little bit higher. The big story is they're trading at 12 and a half times forward. They historically traded at an 18 times PE. Why are they trading at a lower PE? Is because their kidney business is the slowest growing part of their business, of the four parts. They are had planned to spin that to shareholders by the summer, which means the RemainCo could re-rate to a much higher multiple, which we think is a great opportunity. But in the last few weeks, there have been rumors that private equity may be bidding for that kidney business. So it may happen much faster, enabling them to de-lever. And the $1 billion of free cash flow they generated last year, that's going to continue to grow. We'll get the re-rating from the three faster-growing businesses. And we think this can continue to climb higher, work its way towards 60 and beyond over the next 12 to 24 months.
What about Thomas? What about Boeing, by the way? Any thoughts there? I mean, we just had obviously big news, changes in the C-suite.
I love it. Love it.
As why a matter do you fact, love it, Thomas?
Well, we bought this in the last week and a half. So we bought some in 179, mid-180s. Our basis is 183. This is the least amount of research and diligence that we've ever done on a purchase, because effectively they delivered 528 planes last year. They've got a 5,600 backlog. So if you're Southwest and you say, Boeing, you're a complete disaster, I can't believe how many mistakes you're making, I'm going to Airbus. Good for you. You're going to get your next new plane 20 years from now. So Boeing has a moat. They operate in a duopoly. They're going to get a new CEO, which is fantastic. They need an engineer, not a salesman. They've got enough sales. They need someone to manage the shop and make sure there are no issues moving forward.
Insider or outsider? You have a preference for the next CEO?
Probably an outsider. A fresh set of eyes would be nice. I definitely agree with that.
All right. Thomas, Nancy, thank you both for joining the show today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And we're back. And then finally, want to thank Camille Smith for having me on CBS News on Friday with Chris Raggle talking about the Fed decision and our outlook there. So we'll tune in here.
All right, let's talk a little money right now. The Federal Reserve keeping interest rates the same. Yesterday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell announced that the federal funds rate will stay in the 5.25% to 5.5% range. Fed also announcing three rate cuts are expected this year. Well, hallelujah. Joining us now to discuss is Thomas Hayes, Chairman and Managing Member at Great Hill Capital. Thomas, good to have you with us. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, Chris. Glad to be here.
So it seems like for the greater part of the last 2 years, every time Jerome hit the stand or the microphone, everybody was like, oh, here we go. But what was your reaction to obviously his remarks yesterday? And based on what your reaction is, we saw how it obviously reflected on the market.
Yeah, this was a positive surprise, Chris. This was slightly more dovish than the street had anticipated. There was a risk after the last two inflation reports that they might take down the dot plot, the estimates of cuts from 3 to 2. As a matter of fact, half the FOMC members did want to reduce it down to 2, but the majority won. They kept it at 3 cuts, and that's going to provide relief for a lot of people looking for mortgages and interest expense towards the back half of the year. It's a positive outcome.
So anybody from a mortgage standpoint, I know we talk housing all the time, and obviously the economy goes as the housing market goes for the most part. Are you looking at people who are refinancing or first home buyers, probably waiting better end of the late to the fall or so to really get a better deal on interest rates?
Yeah, I think rates will come down gradually, but the market can start to price that in, and we should see in coming weeks a little bit of relief when you look for refinancing or new mortgage rates. So that will be a positive thing, auto financing, et cetera. The market will price that in. The other thing that was really surprising and stood out was that he signaled they were going to taper the taper. What does that mean in English? They were going to stop selling bonds on the open market. And when they reduce the supply that they're putting on the market, that enables rates to also compress. So all in all, this is really good news, not only for Main Street, but more importantly for Wall Street, for Main Street.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, too. You hear a lot lately, there's been a lot of politicians saying, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Well, yesterday, the Dow closed with another record high over 39,000. 4 years ago to the day, 19,000. Now, of course, we know that was when the pandemic first hit, but it just kind of goes to show you the tale of two cities from now until then. For the average mom and pop at home right now who's sitting on a 401k savings, this and that, this kind of news and the market where it is right now, what does it mean to them?
Well, I think it's very constructive for Main Street. This was certainly good news. You saw the market liked it yesterday, a little bit of follow through today. We have moved a lot in a short period of time. We're working on 19 out of 21 consecutive weeks up. So it wouldn't surprise me in coming weeks that we get a little bit of breather. But what we see when we look back to 1928 on average election years are up 11.28%. So while we may get a breather in general indices in the short term in coming weeks, I do think for the year, very, very constructive, and any weakness could be opportunity to add.
So, Thomas, let me ask you this. I mean, I know a lot of people are looking at those numbers saying, hey, wait, 40,000, is it kind of right on the door, knocking on that door? Is that something you foresee in the next couple of weeks, potentially?
Yeah, look, we're going to get there, whether it's the next couple of weeks or the next couple of months. The key is what we saw in the Fed estimates, even. They took GDP estimates up from December. They had anticipated we'd grow GDP at 1.4%. Now, just a few months later, they're saying we're going to grow at 2.1%. They took their estimates of unemployment down from 4.1% to 4.0%. So the data is telling us good things are happening. We just saw it in earnings season. They expected earnings to grow 1%. We grew 3.3%. So that's a big deal.
So, Thomas, when you hear people that are either polled or people that are just reacting and saying that the economy is a major concern of theirs right now, what do you say to them based on all of the numbers that you're seeing and the numbers that we've just discussed?
I think relief is on the way. I think the bulk of people who are feeling that on Main Street, certainly in terms of prices of food, et cetera, those are starting to moderate. We want to see some moderation in housing and owner's equivalent rent. That works on a lag basis. I think we'll start to see that in coming months. Little relief when you go to finance a car, little relief when you go to finance a house or refinance a house. And I think that's going to be a story of the next 2 years. Yeah, you may get a mortgage now. It's going to be a little bit lower, but maybe in a year it's going to be even lower again, and then you can refinance again. So more and more relief on Main Street, and I think people will be feeling better.
Thomas Hayes, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate it. We'll see. I know Dow futures were up about 100 points about 15 minutes ago. I'm not sure where it stands right now, but hopefully another up day on the street, and we appreciate you taking a few moments for us. Good to see you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thomas Hayes from Great Hill Capital this morning. All right, fitness.
And we're back. And then finally, want to thank Akash Sriram and Zahir Kachwala for including me in their article on Reuters regarding the bankruptcy, I think, of Fisker. And moving along, this was really interesting. This came in later last week after the podcast. Jerry Jones put in another $100 million into Comstock at $8.03 per share. So a lot of you have invested pari passu with Jerry Jones, the same deal. He sees what we see, and we think it's just the beginning, and we're going to talk about that this week. He now owns 67% of the company. If I was ever going to co-invest with someone in the natural gas or potentially with the with an E&P name in oil, Jerry Jones would be the name, but certainly on the natural gas side, which is where I'm interested, and we've done just that. Disney finally settles their debacle with DeSantis. Cost Disney money, cost DeSantis a primary. And so they both lose, and they're back to where they started. Congratulations on starting an unnecessary fight. Then Disney stock gets upgraded by Barclays as the turnaround plan takes shape. And here's another one. Commercial real estate is itching for a rebound 2 years after the start of Fed rate hikes. I think it's going to be a slow burn. There's going to be some more pain, but there's also going to be a lot of opportunity. We talked about that young guy, not young guy, my age, going to San Francisco real estate to buy them in the hole and hold them for 10 years. The key with that is just going to be cash burn and leverage. Does he live long enough for the thing to completely turn? My bet is probably, but it's really going to depend on how much leverage they use. Canada Goose to cut 17% of its corporate workforce following a string of retail layoffs. So they're cutting out all the fat here. As we saw, APAC sales were up huge last quarter. Everything is falling into place. Their move to the DTC model and getting out the wholesale, increasing margins, increasing revenues taking place, cutting out the fat. He's doing everything he needs to do. Why? Because it's a family business, multi-generational. He owns 20% of the stock. He's got huge skin in the game and implementing the turnaround plan that he promised to do. The stock sold off on that news, which makes zero sense. The next day it was back up. These GE and 3M spinoffs are set to join S&P 500. We are going to get Sloventum shares next week from our 3M holding. We are going to hold those. We like both, and we're pretty excited about that. So that will be in the S&P 500. Ironically, what came out of the S&P 500 to make way for Sloventum is VF Corp, which is going in the small cap index. And anyone who knows anything about markets knows that often at the point when they get kicked out of the index is when they start to perform, which is counterintuitive. So VF Corp sold off earlier this week on no news. And now you know what the news was. Some institutions had to take it off their books because they're in closet indexers. And then it recovered shortly thereafter. I have full confidence in Brack and Darrell, and that hasn't changed, and we've used the weakness to add at the margins. Small caps suffer the worst run against larger stocks in over 20 years. So on balance, that's an argument about how bad it's been. We see it as the opportunity for how good it's going to be. You're going to see here this underperformance. And then similar to the late 90s before 2002 to 2007, which was its period of best performance by far. And I think we're going to see a big catch-up trade catalyzed by the first cut. And one other factor that we're going to be spending a lot of time on in this week's podcast video cast. Tom Lee agrees he sees small cap Russell benchmark surging by 50% in 2024. We couldn't agree more. Here's the article in Fortune about the turnaround plan to make Vans, Supreme, and the North Face cool again. North Face is already cool. Supreme fell by the wayside. It wasn't that big to start with. And Vans, he's spending 99% of his time there. And you'll see some of the things that we pointed out that they're making changes are starting to gain traction, which is exciting, whether it's new school, whether it's the new skater stuff, some of the people he's gotten rid of, some of the people he's bringing in, it's all moving in the right direction there. China industrial profits hit a 25-month high amid signs of bottoming out. China industrial profits reached a 25-month high of 10.2% positive year-on-year. Year-to-date in the first 2 months of 2024, combined with earlier industrial production data, we see positive signs for industrials having bottomed out. That's from ING Bank. China's premier says nation off to a good start on 2024 goals. Are Chinese tech stocks value plays now? And the answer is, of course, look at the multiples they're trading at relative to the growth, free cash flow, etc. We're spending time on that this week. I know my Babaholics haven't had their fill in the last few weeks because everything else is working and we've spent a bit on everything else. And now we'll go back to what we think is going to be the biggest of all this week. Apple could double down on China market, Wedbush says. You saw Tim Cook over there. Rather than pulling out, he's doubling down on investment. Yuan rebounds, and probably it only took him a few weeks of trying to manufacture in India to figure out that dodging cows in the streets and stepping over excretion is probably not the most ideal environment to bet all your chips. Yuan rebounds, and by the way, that's no insult. I lived in India, unbelievable country, unbelievable people. They just kind of overstepped the industrialization part and the infrastructures part, although they're catching up very quickly and will be a huge force to be reckoned with. They're just not anywhere near China is as far as a manufacturing superpower on the infrastructure. That will change over the next 5 to 10 years. And yes, they will be the next thing. And we intend and plan on investing all of our China profits that we make over the next 3 to 5 years into India at the end of that China run. Because by that time, India's population will be starting, the bulk of it will starting to approach 30, and that's where the magic starts. China's in the middle of that right now. U.S. is in the middle of that right now. So they've each got, you know, five, in the case of the U.S., probably about 8 more years. In the case of China, about 4 to 5 more years. And in the case of India, we don't think the action begins in earnest for another 3 to 5 years and then could go for a decade plus. You on rebounds as PBOC sends strong message of support via fixing. This is a critical component to our thesis, which we covered last week. You can review that. Three Ant Group subsidiaries to go independent in Chinese fintech giant's biggest restructure since blocked IPO. So they're going to be growing internationally aggressively as well. We own a third of that through our Baba Holdings. Freshippos, the piece of business that we get zero credit for, that we own through Alibaba. They actually doubled their gross merchandise volume year on year. That's the Costco of China that we keep talking about, owned by Alibaba. Xi seeks to soothe the anxieties of American CEOs. So you had Schwarzman over there. You had the FedEx CEO over there, Chubb CEO over there, Broadcom CEO over there, Tim Cook over there. Everyone was over there seeing Xi. Xi was saying, invest here, it's going to be okay. Our growth has not peaked. We are moving ahead, and we are ahead of schedule this year. China signals more property support, but substance to be key for the turnaround. They're doing what they have to do, kicking and screaming, just like they did with COVID. Eventually, they go back to the playbook that works every single cycle and will continue to work every single cycle. China's economy is on track for strong March performance, survey says. We covered that. And now on to the general market, some indicators that we're looking at just to try to get a feel. We did kind of speak to our view there, 98% long, 2% hedge short. We hope that hedge works. We hope we get a 3 to 8% pullback here in the next month or two. But if it doesn't, there's enough beta in the portfolio to more than pay for it and outperform. But if it does, then we're going to get a free 10% of capital, expected value 5x on the 2% that then invested into year end could be 20 points of alpha. So we'll see. But it kind of shows where we are. Yes, cautious, but fully invested tells you everything you need to know. Put 10-day put call, 10-day average put call ratio at an near an extreme low. I mean, this is not... So you see it spike out up at lows. It's getting very, very complacent, which you see sometimes during highs, but sometimes during trends. So it's inconclusive. The NYSE, 10% volume index, a little bit stretched. Same thing with the EMA, 1% EMA of advanced decline ratio. If you remember last year, we were saying this is not even getting started. It was all the way down here. Now this has moved a lot, but it could move even further before we see any type of top. And as you know, our longer term view is very bullish for the next 8 years and even for the next year and a half. But in the short term, 17 out of 21 weeks, 100 days without a 2% pullback, maybe we keep pushing higher just because of all the people that have been negative for a year and a half as the market absolutely crushed it. And now they've all flipped and they're trying to chase the shiny objects. They have to be punished soon. We just don't know exactly when, and that's why we have that 2% hedge on. Here, NASDAQ, Cohen high low. This looks a little stretched, trying to turn in. But again, you know, on a case-by-case basis, it's not clear. NASDAQ up, down on balance volume, that's not what you see at a top. Burke high lows, yeah, it's a little bit stretched. This real estate stock still have more room to run. Material stocks look a little bit stretched. Healthcare in the middle, stuck in the middle with you. Dow intermediate term breath momentum, stuck in the middle, turning down even while price is up. Maybe we play a little catch up there and get a little bit of weakness. NASDAQ, same type of thing. The price has gone up and intermediate term volume momentum oscillator has gone down. That's usually you should get a catch up in price maybe after the quarter as people book their quarters and then move forward. That could be something to be said. And then the National Association of Active Investment Managers, a little bit elevated, of course. PMO by all, nowhere near an extreme. So that could push higher. PMO by DJI, those on the PMO crossover buys, basically like golden crosses. Same thing with the SPX. This is not extreme either. So you have to be selective, and that's why there are plenty of places to put money to work when we can add to positions at the margin all day long, even though the market feels a little bit short-term stretched, there's still many things that are just starting to participate as breadth improves. And that's why we've been so nuanced, not chasing the shiny objects, but adding where it makes sense, like the Comstock Resources in the last few weeks, like the VF Corps in the last few weeks, et cetera, where we could find good weakness and good value, we took advantage. Bullish percent S&P, a little stretched, you know, came off the boil, price is still going up. That could bode for some short-term modest pullback. So you see it across the board. Same with the NASDAQ McClellan summation. That's come off the boil. Price is still elevated. Price should probably catch up and pull in. And by the way, interestingly enough, tech has underperformed in the last month. So keep an eye on that. Semis have been a little bit weaker. You can take a look at the SMH index. And then skew, we've got our eye on. This has been pretty stretched here that you could see in a trending, but you could also see a bit of a pullback with the smart money buying 1 and 2 standard deviation protection out of the money tells us that we have to just keep an eye open for some short-term weakness, et cetera. So, and then the VIX is very subdued, could get more subdued. And we would expect it to trend more subdued over the next year and a half. But that doesn't mean in the short term we don't get these little modest pullbacks like you saw in 17, like you even saw in mid-2013, despite the fact the market trended higher for another year, year and a half, which we do anticipate. Natural gas is the only commodity I want to look at right now. We're going to talk about that 2002 to 2007 period. I think natural gas is set up pretty similarly yet again. If you look at that spike up it had in 2000, crash, and then a little fake out bottoming here before the big move from 2002 to 2007, you see commercial hedgers started to position long against it, just like they have been aggressively here in the last handful of months. We have positive outlook for natural gas. And if you read any of the notes about the biggest fear with AI, is similar to what you saw with crypto mining, is that the demand for energy becomes unlimited. And where is that transition energy going to be fueled from? Natural gas. Jerry Jones knows this. Tom Hayes knows this. All of my clients know this. Do you know this? And so we like that story. We like that setup and that. Let's look at some ratio charts. This is the dollar relative to the S&P. That's not really a useful chart. Gold relative to the S&P, it's been trading down. It's starting to pick up some legs. We'll see if that follows through. We have no view or position on gold. Biotech looks like it's putting in a double bottom relative to the S&P 500. Defense stocks, they had a huge move in 2022. They've been kind of coming off the boil. How are we playing this? We're playing it through Boeing, where we have space. We've been adding Boeing. A basis around 183 across the board, and we like that. Small caps relative to the S&P, this is a double bottom of all double bottoms in our view, and we're going to talk a little bit about why in this week's article of the week. We love small cap exposure here for the next 3 to 4 years, and we've been talking a lot of small caps, whether it's Cooper Standard, Comstock Resources, VF Corp, Goose, you name it, we're building out the book of small caps for a reason. Real estate relative to the S&P has been getting smashed. I would be paying attention in the next 6 weeks for a move higher, yields lower in the TLT, which is going to start to see benefit for some REITs, and which we've expressed through Crown Castle, which we like that tower business quite a bit. We got some activists helping that stock. And as rates compress, those are going to re-accelerate. And that one's got a long way to go. This is transports are down relative to the S&P. We think there's some opportunity there. NASDAQ relative to the S&P has been a huge outperformer. I don't think it's going to crash. I do think it's going to be an underperformer as we've been seeing in the last handful of weeks. I think that's going to persist. It's going to stabilize the indexes, and the value and the money is going to be made under the surface for the remainder of the year, the big money under the surface. And then finally, that's the TLT, which we discussed, and then home builders, they look a little stretched, which is kind of interesting because when you look at the demography of the demand for housing and building, it should persist aggressively for the next 5 years. But it feels like a lot of that's been priced in here, even though the multiples are low. So that's not something we would be chasing. We'd be playing it different ways, mainly through literal picks and shovels like Stanley Black & Decker, Generac, et cetera, which will benefit from new home construction. For those of you who don't know, Stanley has Craftsman, Stanley, Black & Decker, DeWalt, et cetera, everything you need to do to build homes, roads, et cetera. Moving along, you've got communication services that have been just straight up in the last year and a half. And And then you've got energy, which had that huge run. We laid off a lot in late 2022. And after the huge run, it's been basically sideways for a year and a half. Now we've re-expressed in a material way, betting alongside Jerry Jones with Comstock. And that move, in our view, is just beginning, literally just beginning. So we're very excited about that. Financials have had a big move. Obviously, we've owned Citi and Bank of America and exposure in the KRE index, which has been fantastic across the board. I think they'll persist over the next year. It's been a big move in the last 6 months, so that probably starts to underperform, but we want to own those for a bit longer and maybe materially longer. We'll take it as it comes. Industrial starting to perk up. Tech, again, you know, they've been outperforming and I think starting to take a breather here on a relative basis. Staples really look like they're bottoming. And what would cause staples to get bid? Number one, a little pullback. Number one. Number two, yields start to compress and they'll start to get bid. And I think there are going to be some opportunity there. And then finally, utilities, same exact story. If I'm right about yields going back down below 4% on the 10-year, then staples are going to fly, utilities are going to fly, REITs are going to fly, healthcare is going to start to move more, et cetera. And then discretionary has been a little weak. There's some opportunity there. That's on a relative basis. Exploration and production we have through Comstock. Retail, same thing. So starting to look at opportunity there. That's where the Gooses of the world come in, et cetera. Now, more to grow or time to go, stock market and sentiment results. Well, you got my general overview in the three videos which we covered, but I want to cover a very important point this week, which is small caps and emerging markets plus natural gas. In our weekly podcast videocast, we've been laying out the case that numerous current conditions mirror the 2002 to 2007 period, where both small caps and emerging markets slash China, which is the biggest weight of emerging markets, and commodities had their biggest runs in basically the shortest period of time in history. So you can see this chart is the small cap 600, S&P small cap 600, with the Hang Seng Index, which, by the way, is so interesting because these are the areas from a investment standpoint. We go to where the puck is going, not to chasing the shiny objects. It's magnificent. It's almost a one-to-one correlation, which if you'd ask 10 people on the street, is there like a one-to-one correlation between the Hang Seng Index and the U.S. Small Cap Index, they'd be like, how are they related? Well, it has everything to do with the cost of money and the U.S. dollar. And here you can see during that period, Hang Seng was up 127. You're going to see it was up a lot more than that if you add another year on. Small caps, triple digit. Range Resources, which we still have a position from $4.10, is also not even halfway done with its move. Now it's $33-$34 and change, and we're holding, hodling. That was up 1,100 percent during the 2002 to 2007, and Comstock Resources during those 4 years was up 341%. And actually, if you go a year out, it was up like over 1,000%. So we think Comstock has real strong potential for the next 3 to 5 years. And we've expressed that commensurate with that viewpoint. You can see above the four-year performance of the Hang Seng Small Cap 600, Range Resources, and Comstock Resources. Here's the zoom out link, so you can see in this blue box. And as you see, the Hang Seng did a lot more than that. It was up 400% in those 5 years versus four-year period. The other thing I find very interesting about the Hang Seng, which is basically China Tech, which is basically Alibaba, Tencent, JD, is and Pinduoduo, which we covered 3 weeks ago, which we think is greater than coin flip chances. The numbers aren't completely accurate. They're either unsustainable or incorrect. And unsustainable because you can't keep selling garbage at a loss in perpetuity, or incorrect relative to that Financial Times article that compared apples to apples and like questioned how you could actually have the volumes based on the spend, employees, warehouse space. It didn't add up. And Nels claim they're doing asset light and they've reinvented the wheel. But time will tell whether they are the next Alibaba or the next Luckin Coffee, which went bankrupt from fraudulent numbers and then restructured out of bankruptcy after they wiped out the equity holders and now is making a good run. And that's not to say PDD wouldn't make a good run if they went into bankruptcy from, you know, inaccurate numbers. It's perfectly feasible that their numbers are accurate. I do believe they are unsustainable to operate at a loss, but Financial Times took another cut at it, which we covered 3 weeks ago, which I think is worth a read or at least an understanding of before placing investment there. The other thing that's kind of interesting about this 2002 to 2007 period, the Hang Seng had collapsed from 2000 to 2002, and then it put in this kind of very similar bottom where you had this you had this check back, then you had this first leg down, which we had in late 2022. Then you had this big steep rally, which we had in early 2023 when we thought we were off to the races. And then you have this final flush out, which we've just experienced, painful Chinese water torture, literally and figuratively drip, drip, drip for a year. And then finally you just absolutely take off. And I think that's where we are. Now, one more metric, and let me explain why. One more metric we look at that points to an imminent similar period of outperformance, both for small caps and Hang Seng, China Tech, Alibaba, is the Federal Reserve New Financial Conditions Index. In their words, there's a lot of words here. Let me just get to the most important ones. Is this conditions index not only takes into account seven financial variables, Fed funds rate, 10-year treasury yield, 30-year fixed mortgage, triple B corporate bond yield, Dow Jones total stock market index, Zillow house price index, and the nominal broad dollar index using weights used by that Federal Reserve Board. It is explicit in its considerations of the lags of Fed policy in addition to it. And that's what I think has made this more accurate. And what do I mean by more accurate? Note the similar periods of this new financial conditions index. They call it financial conditions index growth, FCIG indicator, peak and rollover, and what happened to the Hang Seng and small caps during these periods. So here are the periods that it peaked and started to roll over, the new Federal Reserve Financial Conditions Index, January 1995, September 2002, February 2009, February 2016, and October 2023. And you can see, as I overlaid it on the Hang Seng with the small caps behind it, Hang Seng in red and black, small caps in black, is these are the periods. These circles line up with these blue lines, and you can see that in every instance, it was literally where the Hang Seng was bottoming before a monstrous rally along with small caps, U.S. small caps. Uncanny the correlation between those two, but it has to do with the cost of capital and the cost of money, et cetera, and the value of the dollar. So you can see here, monster rally in 95, monster rally. And as a matter of fact, little bit of a head fake in 2002 before the biggest rally of all time. It turned at this leg here. It took another 6 months and then straight up. 2009, it was right on the money. 2016, it was right on the money. A little bit of time to wait before you had the parabolic move up. And here we are. I think this is very similar to the 2002 again, where you had a few months early before taking off straight up after this financial conditions index rolled over, which you should go through this paragraph and understand the components, and it will make sense as to why it catalyzed both a move in the Hang Seng and a move in the small caps. By the way, I should have overlaid biotech. My guess is the correlation again is a one. And like I say, when it comes all at once. I think all these three things are going to be humming in short order. As a friendly reminder, here is a message I sent to a very good friend this week, which is the psychology of a market cycle. It takes you from the period of disbelief when no one wants an asset or an index or a company. Then you have a little bit of hope. Then you have optimism, belief, thrill, euphoria. And I think there are some pockets right now that are at or near euphoria. Then you get the check back, you get some complacency, then it starts to fall further, you get anxiety, then you get denial, oh, it can't go much further, then you get panic and the forced selling, then it just does nothing and falls down to lows, then people get angry, then it keeps falling and building that base for the next cycle, and that's when people are in anger and on the verge of depression. And I think we're just finishing this depression phase, which spawns the first part of the cycle, which is the disbelief rally. This is the first part of the long-term parabolic move, which it begins as the disbelief rally. So whether Alibaba, KWeb, JD, Tencent, it's all the exact same chart. You can see them all here. So if you're trying to understand the fundamentals of Baba or JD or Tencent, don't waste your time. The fundamentals are not going to matter. All I can tell you is they're all cheap. They're all throwing off cash flow. They're at record low multiples in terms of the spectrum of percentages for each multiple. It's the same chart for now. The fundamentals won't matter in the short-term emotional voting machine until they do in the long-term fundamental weighing machine. We are past the lows. We believe those were put in at $57 in late 2022. And that would be in line with the bottom of the anger period. Okay, so like, I mean, it's uncanny how close this is. This would have been better even on a weekly chart, but you had your basic, you know, I'll just chart it for you for those of you who can't see it. Euphoria was up here, complacency was here, anxiety was here, denial was here, panic was here. Then you had this bounce back up. That was setting the stage for anger down here. And then the final flush of anger, which is the low. Then we've just gone through depression. You get these two peaks. You get two peaks. This is uncanny. And then you start to make this lower low, which flips people out. And that's right before depression turns to disbelief as the market rips higher and no one believes it. Everyone's going to be saying, quote, this is a sucker's rally. Get ready at 120. Everyone will say this is a sucker's rally. And what will happen next is we will get a check back and then we will move into the hope phase and then into the optimism phase and then into the belief phase and then into the thrill phase and then into the euphoria phase. And I'm not making this assertion just on squiggly, stupid lines because there are some companies here burning cash or that maybe have cookbooks that will go to zero in China, but the ones that have real free cash flow, the leaders, the Babas, the KWeb is an ETF of all of them, the Tencents and maybe even the JDs, they're going to find themselves benefiting from this period and this regime change that we've been pointing to for some time. Said another way, we are at the aversion phase of the bottoming process. This is just another market cycle psychology model by Justin Mamas. And you can see here, again, it correlates perfectly. You had the enthusiasm, then you have the panic down here, then you have the discouragement all the way down here, then you get this rally and you get anxiety up here, which everyone had, then you get aversion, which is where you get absolutely destroy people right where we are right now. Then we're going to rally back up to, you know, the 120, 15, 120 level. That's going to be where there's denial. And then boom, back up all the way up here into the 200 and change. And I know people are looking at me like, come on, we're not going back to 200. You watch. And that will be returning confidence. And then we'll get to the enthusiasm when there are famous people on TV jumping up and down and naming their dogs after Alibaba. And that's when we'll be laying off. Now on to the shorter term view for the general market. Bullish percent got up to 50%. That's approaching euphoria for retail investors. Bearish is down to 22. There's not a fear in the room. That's not where I want to be adding a lot of new money, certainly for the things that ran, definitely for the things that haven't run, because this regime change is just beginning. Next, fear and greed at 70. It's definitely greedy. It's not jump on the table, Tom Cruise enthusiastic, but it's getting there. And then finally, National Association of Active Investment Managers. This was 93.22, so it came a little bit off the boil from 104. My guess is this afternoon when the numbers print, it'll be back up triple digits. People are getting euphoric and chasing. And then finally, the earnings estimates came down a hair, down to 243 for this year. No one's really paying attention to that yet. I think they will be paying attention to that in the next week or so, and that will enable us to get the concerns back for a little bit of a pullback. I guess earnings are not done yet for this week. You can check the website for those later this afternoon. And then let's get on to the Ask Me Anything questions and rock and roll. So first question comes from Phil Moore. Nope, that is a spam. All right. Ivor Barry. Hi, Tom. Two things. Is Fox Factory a buy at these levels? Second, which existing stock in your portfolio is most attractive in terms of upside? Keep up the great work. I think Alibaba is. Okay, so there you go. I mean, here's how I would think of a portfolio. You know, people say, you always see people, oh, I can't wait till Baba goes up. But like, why? Do you only have one position in your portfolio? We had an awesome year last year and Alibaba was a negative contributor. So, you know, if you're depending on one stock to make your performance and to build your wealth, you're making a big mistake. That said, we love the setup and we're actually grateful that it didn't contribute last year, because we want it to be a major contributor this year so we can replicate the outcome we had last year with a new stock. So we think that one's a big deal. But again, you know, if you're running a book of 20 stocks, the framework is the same. We've said this before. It's like if you showed me 1,000 investment opportunities that all had the same characteristics as Bitcoin, 999 are going to fail, and one outperformed everything in the last 10 years. But I wouldn't take the 999 to one bet, because they don't write books about the 999 out of 1,000 that failed. The same is true with the framework that we use for picking stocks. Out of 1,000 stocks, 999 are going to work using our framework. One may not, because it just doesn't. But of the 999, you can have a sense of which is going to be a double versus a triple versus a five bagger. But sometimes things just, you know, the ones that you expect are going to just be up 50% wind up being up 200%, and the ones that you think are going to be up 500% wind up being up 50%. So the answer to your question is, you don't want to get too overweight over your skis, we have limits on the max that we'll ever put any one position, and we think that's warranted in Alibaba. But the two filters that we use, which we've discussed with you many times, number one is, if any one position went to zero, would they take me out on a stretcher? And the answer is no. Baba could go to zero and we'd still have a great year. And two, or be able to make it up with the remaining, you know, 11 to 8 positions in terms of outperformance relative to the S&P 500. And number two is, if I were to offer to buy the entire company of the stock that I'm looking at current market prices and brought that offer to the board, would they have me escorted out of the building by security because they would think I was insulting and crazy? And in the case of Alibaba, they would not let me through the front door at current prices because they've got $80 billion of cash. They're generating $25 billion of free cash flow. And if I'm going to offer them anything close to what the market is pricing them at, I'm not getting a meeting. I think they would start to talk to me at $200 a share and reject me. And I think at $300 or $350, they might hit the bid just because they've been getting their butts kicked in for the last 2 years and they're probably tired and sad. But I will tell you another thing. When the stock is over $200 and everyone's excited again, and I would offer them $300, they would also have security take me out of the building because they'll think it's going to $600 then, and we'll be out much sooner than that. So that's that. Fox Factory, we've covered this one a bunch of times. I don't like these businesses. All of the financials make sense. We are not getting in. This is a Malibu boats for us. I think both of them are going to work, and we're not going to be involved in either one. I don't like these recreational vehicle businesses. They're too cyclical. They're too unpredictable. And yes, rates go down. They'll do well. But look, people have 13.5-year-old cars. We've got that covered with Advanced Auto Parts, with the cars breaking down. And for the people who can't afford, and then we've got the other side covered with the new cars. The ones that can't be fixed are going to need new cars. But at the end of the day, we're at an extreme. The rubber band has been stretched as far as it can go with the average fleet, 13.5 years. They're either fixing it at Advanced Auto Parts or they're buying new ones. Which Cooper Standard benefits from. Just to put a little bit of a bookmark on what I'm looking for. Look, free cash flow is rolling over, revenues are rolling over, gross margins are compressing, but the stock is priced in a lot of that bad news. So I can completely understand how and why you're looking at this stock. And you know what? It's probably going to work for you as a trade. I'm just saying we're not going to be in it. The other thing to keep in mind here is when they collapse like this, I mean, going back to the sentiment chart, leaving aside the fundamentals for just a second here, you know, where do you think we are on this chart? If I had to say one way or another, I would say you're right here in disbelief. And you'll get this little bounce and you'll get all excited and then you'll get another flush down into panic. If we're just going off sentiment, if we're going off fundamentals, which is what we primarily go off of, I'd say this is priced in a lot of bad news. Let me just take a look at the cash flow statement just to see if they've got the runway to turn the ship around. My guess is they do. Let me just make this a little bit smaller too, so we can see everything. Yeah, free cash flow is fine. They'll turn it around. I mean, return on capital has been consistently declining. I just don't like these businesses, so that's why I'm not involved. I think I could definitely see it going further lower. I could also see it working and being a great trade for you, Ivor. Great question. Thanks for checking in. Next one is from Rob Natara. Since you're a glass is half full type of guy and not one of those doomers, I want to get your perspective on how concerned you are about the current level of Congress spending with deficits nearing $2 trillion and showing no signs of slowing down. Do you believe this trend can continue indefinitely without consequences such as inflation or devaluation of the dollar? Additionally, do you feel your investment portfolio is well positioned to withstand a potential turmoil that may arise from these economic factors, getting a little concerned and want to be protected? We are explicitly positioned for this. Number one is what we've been saying for the last year, which is they're going to run the same playbook as they did post-World War II when debt to GDP was 120%. They borrowed to fight a visible enemy, and we have borrowed to fight an invisible enemy and then some with COVID. But this 2% target is a joke, and Powell admitted as much last week, which is why the market's been up, which is basically he's reset the inflation target to 3%, because you don't commit to three cuts with stock market at all-time highs if you're not going to run inflation hot. And that's exactly what they're going to do for the next 3 to 5 years. It worked in the 50s. They brought down debt to GDP from 120 down to 63 in a handful of years. I think they could follow that same playbook. But we do believe the dollar is going to be weaker, which benefits Chinese stocks, international stocks, and the like. And that's how we're going to benefit from that. It's, it also benefits natural gas, Comstock Resources, and several of the other names in the portfolio. So yeah, we are positioned for that. As far as the world blowing up and all the doomers out there, they're going to inflate it away the same that all governments have done since the beginning of time. Moving along to, so thank you, Rob. Matea, by way of introduction, okay, that's a thing for me to go on their podcast. Shonda, that's spam. Sorry about that. Daniel, here we go. Latest thoughts, please, on the Daniel D. Latest thoughts, please, on the probability that SMH will make new highs versus punish the latecomers. No change. We have a hedge on it. We think it's going to show some weakness. We've already started to see it. It did peak 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. So wait, the 7th. It peaked. We're at the 28th. Hasn't made new highs. I think that's going to continue to show some weakness in the near term. And if we're wrong, we're long 98%. But that's a risk reward I'm willing to take. I like the asymmetry. One down, five up. I'll take that all day long. Brett Nye, what gives your confidence that Cooper Standard will meet its debt obligations? Their PIK loans are going to stack up. Huge principal and interest balance over the next 2 years, even if EBITDA recovers. They would still have to use all of it and more to cover their interest expense, let alone debt repayments. Where are they going to get this money? And will creditors give them reasonable rates? Number one, they just turned free cash flow positive with volumes nowhere near close to the 2017 peaks. Those are climbing. Number two, they've got maturities out to 2027. So they bought themselves another 3 years. Number three, rates are going down, not up. They're going to be able to refinance at lower rates. And number four, you're underestimating the operating leverage in the business. They've taken out over $400 million of costs. So comparing apples to apples in 2017, in theory, they should be making $11 a share if we got back to those volumes. I don't think we're getting back to those volumes, which is why I have it at seven, and so on. But your concerns are valid. They were just more valid when we took the position at $5.10 when the refinancing wasn't assured and they got it done in the worst credit market that we've seen in 10 years, where the high yield market was completely closed and they still got the job done. And then finally, go look at property, plant and equipment. There's still a lot of liquidity there, sale leasebacks that they can do to raise up to $100 million or more cash is my estimate at least. And that's the story. So not without risk, nothing's without risk. And that's why, you know, you probably weren't involved at five, and whether you should be involved at 16 or not is completely up to you. As always, opinion, not advice. Check with your financial advisor. I don't know your financial situation. I deal exclusively with accredited, sophisticated investors. And that's what we're doing. Joe Galtieri. I read that auto supply chains will be affected by the bridge collapse in Baltimore. Any thoughts of how or if that might affect Cooper Standard? By the way, I really look forward to your podcast. Thanks for sharing your knowledge. Joe, thanks for the email. Thanks to you for being a loyal listener, as to all the AMA participants. And by the way, it takes a lot of courage for someone to send in an AMA. So I give credit to everyone for sending in their questions. Okay, this won't be a long tail event. There was an article in the Journal yesterday talking about all the alternative roads, routes, etc. It may have some short-term impact, and maybe that'll give us an opportunity to get some more stock. But as far as being a long tail, we don't see it at the moment. So thanks for that, Joe. Max Hughes, terribly sorry for your loss. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your valuable insights on my last AMA question on PayPal and the value traps in general. I bought a bunch more and will continue to do so. That's up to you. Last week, you mentioned Bear and how it has been mismanaged in the last years. I couldn't agree more. Living in Germany myself, it's a sad thing to see. However, I was wondering recently if this has become a turnaround opportunity similar to 3M, which is facing legal headwinds. So 3M has largely quantified its legal risks last year, number one. Number two, you get the two, they're spinning off Solventum that will give you two bites of the apple. One will be faster growing with less liabilities. One will be slower growing with more liabilities. But the sum of the parts, as we look a year to 3 years out, is going to be much higher than it is today. I think the biggest risk with 3M would be a dividend cut, which would cause a short-term sell-off and a long-term rally. So I'll leave it at that, but I'm very happy that they got a new CEO. That's a big catalyst, and we're very comfortable with the position at present. That's Max. And then let's go over to Luca Milosavljevic. Luca Milosavljevic. Thanks for the commentary. Great commentary every week. I have a quick question regarding Alibaba. Now that the delisting threat is most likely out of the way, what now could be the worst case scenario? What now could be the worst case scenario is the worst case scenario with every stock. It could go to zero, and you have to be positioned accordingly. The reason I'm asking this is I see a lot of people I've talked to agree that is undervalued, but seem to want to take a risk. They're not going to take the risk until it's 120. Don't worry about it. They'll be back. Can you explain what they mean with risk now that the delisting is not a thing anymore? The risk is they're saying that there's government risk. The point is the stock is down some 80%. That risk is largely priced in. And if anything, the tide has turned. They're blinded by recency bias from the stupid decisions that the government made during COVID. And the aggressive decisions that they've now realized and relented, as they've got 20% youth unemployment and people protesting on the streets and a threat to their actual feasibility of them staying in power, that they have to pivot. And that's why they're inviting all the US CEOs back and saying, mea culpa, we're still growing, we're going to be friendly to you guys now, blah, blah, blah. And because they realize they're toast without it. So they're making these pivots. No one will believe it. This is, again, going back to the psychology chart here. This is going to be the disbelief rally, okay? This is going to be the whole period here and say government risk. They're going to go, you know, they're going to take over. They're going to nationalize Alibaba or whatever is going to be the latest headline. And no one's going to believe it. It's going to go up to 120, and then everyone's going to get in at 120. You're going to get a pullback before the next phase of the rally, and then the final parabolic move when people start naming their dogs Alibaba and telling you to buy at 300 plus. So, so that's that. Nothing's without risk. Size accordingly. Assume every position in your portfolio could go to zero, and if they did, would you still be able to outperform with your remaining X number of companies? And that's what I live by every single morning. Moving along. Joe. Joe D'Ancona asks, thoughts on EW Scripps selling at 6x free cash flow and less than 0.14% of sale, price to sales ratio. Okay, SSP. This is like that other one in Georgia called, that people keep asking me about every single week, which is a regional TV station, I believe. Can't think of it off the top of my head. All right, SSP. The problem with these is they usually have an enormous amount of leverage, but they should make money in an election year with all of the All right, so their free cash flow is rolling over. So is their stock. Revenues are weakening. They should be strengthening in an election year. Gross profit margin is declining. But, you know, if stock's down from 24 to 4, the question is, has enough been priced in? And then the only analysis to do with something like this is a solvency analysis. So let's just take a quick look at the balance sheet, and then you can do a more pronounced analysis on your own. Debt to EBITDA is 7x. Yeah, so it's down because people are worried about refinancing risk. What's the interest expense? I don't love these businesses. I don't see $213 million of interest expense, $50 million of free cash flow. Look, it's betting on insolvency, and there's probably, you know, a 25% chance that happens. But if it doesn't and they get refinanced and rates lower, the question is how quickly do rates lower relative to when they have to refinance? And if they refinance and they lower their interest expense, and even if the business stays flattish, you know, probably rebounds to $14 pretty quickly. And if they get caught and it takes 6 months longer for the Fed to cut rates, then it goes to zero. So that's your downside. $4 down, $12 up, size accordingly. That's all I can tell you. And that's without even starting to do the work, which is, I would say, is essential before you do anything at all. Thank you for your podcast. Helps me since years to get better at investing. Was one, you're welcome, from Sweden. Kai from Sweden. Kai Grotiki. Thank you for that. Was wondering what you think about two stocks. Kering, I've been wanting to look at that. They own Gucci. The sales were down 20%. And Albemarle. I think I covered Albemarle. That's a lithium company. I tend to avoid those, like, either uranium, it's like CCJ, or lithium companies, because they're just too cyclical. If you really have a view on the underlying, just buy the commodity. But Albemarle keeps coming across my desk. I keep doing nothing, or my screen. I keep looking at it, and I keep doing nothing. I think this one's going to work. I think it's a little early. And that comes from just experience of being in the game for a long time. There's nothing really not to love about it. And I also don't really have space for it right now. You know, this is a big issue. You know, negative $824 million of free cash flow, that's a problem. Obviously, and that's why the stock is down so much. Let's take a look at the balance sheet for a second here. It's been a low quality business for some time. in terms of it's not a compounder, which means in English, compounding at its current rate, it would take you 30 years to double your money. That's not a business that I'm interested in. But let's just take a closer look here to the balance sheet. So they've got some cash. And how much debt do they have? So they got $800 million of cash, $8.6 billion of debt. So it's a leveraged commodity play. When they work, they work. I would, for me, this is a pass. If we got down to like the low 100s, I'd probably just have to take a punt on it. First do some work and take a look. But if this runs away from me here, God bless. I'm happy to miss that one, error of omission. But a little bit lower, it would probably warrant me doing some heavy lifting on the work to see if I want to own it or not. Right now, it's not in that space. Quentin Colleen, what is your opinion on the airline industry as a whole across the board? Airline stocks have been down. Airline stocks are strong buy. I think we covered this a few months ago, and I said buy Jets or whatever it was. So it's had this run from 15 to 20, so it's up 25%. I think this will work higher over the next few years. Business travel is really just coming back in earnest. The revenge travel is a little rearview mirror, but still strong. But buying them on a discrete basis, you have to be careful and you got to do the solvency analysis, et cetera. But buying a basket, I think it's going to work higher. But there are better places for my money. And then finally, Jack Zhang. So Jack is he's the one that sent in the one on that Clear company. And as far as him wanting to short Canada Housing, which I said, how would you express? He said, shorting non-bank, non-prime mortgage lender brokers and specific residential REITs in Canada. Hedge on the energy. I think you're making life too hard for yourself, Jack. I mean, why are you wasting your time looking for the next big short that only happens once every 20 years when you could just be buying good quality companies that are still on sale? Like, if in a short, if it goes against you, your loss is unlimited. And so if you're going to do some of these non-prime lenders, quantify your risk and express it with defined risk. And not to say that that won't be a good bet for you, but don't underestimate the amount of liquidity that's been created in globally over the last 5 years. And getting like aggressive pound the table short on things is probably not the best use of capital at the moment. But I think you're on track for where you would be looking. Just make sure you quantify in how you express it. And then leave it at that. The other thing you have to keep in mind is, what would your thesis look like if 18 months from now, the Canadian Central Bank has lowered interest rates by 200 basis points, and then you're screwed. So I will tell you one thing, there's a very low probability that rates are going up in Canada in the next 6 months. And if they go down, that's gonna just destroy your view on housing for some time. So I just wouldn't make the bet. I think the asymmetry is against you, not for you, even though it could work. Looking into UK. This is from Sven Thorstrom. He's got a mid cap for UK because he heard I'm looking at UK stocks. Clarivate. There's my typing. Brilliant. Clarivate. Okay, CLVT. All right, so this stock's down from 34 down to 8. Doesn't have a lot of history here. You can't really see it operate through height cycles. So for me, that's probably a pass, but let's take a look at the business. I'm sure it's going to look good. Sven, price is down, cash flow's up, revenue's up, gross margin is okay, reaccelerating. What do they do? Information services provider, academia and government, life sciences, healthcare, intellectual, web of science, NCs, but academic research landscape, ProQuest and eBook Central. All right, so you just have to make sure that this stuff that they're selling does not become worth zero, meaning it becomes available for free. This is a tricky business, but the stock may be pricing in a lot of that. Let's just take a look here. So the revenues have stalled out a bit after big growth. Probably still generating a lot of cash. Yes. I mean, I think this one, low return on capital. It's worth looking at. I'm probably going to look at it, say, yeah, it's interesting. It's probably more of a trade than an investment. It's probably not a good enough business for me to get excited. But I think it's good to point out. And then he's got a micro cap. Profitable growing startup in the renewable sustainability sector. Yeah, I hate that sector. I got to be honest with you. I don't. All right, I'll take a half a second to look at it, but I'm not putting my money there. Let me just be perfectly clear with you. By the way, to the other guy in Canada, instead of shorting Canadian housing, why don't you start shorting these EV companies that is basically not Tesla or the existing OEMs? Just short all the individual one-off EV companies. You'll probably make a lot more money than shorting Canada housing. Fisker just went out. Just find all the others. They'll be next. Enerqua. I can't even find this microcap. Let me just see here. I can probably find it in here. Enerqua. Yeah, here we go. All right, so they're turning the corner. Stock's been smashed. Revenues keep growing. Free cash flow has gone from excessively negative to flipping the corner. What do they do? Solutions for water efficiency and decarbonation through district heating and ground source heat pump systems for social housing, commercial clients, and residential sectors. So what I'd want to understand, source heat pump, hybrid, multi-occupancy heating system, UK, rest of Europe. This is interesting, the heat pump business. I think Carter did a deal on the basis of this. I would look into this because this might be playing some government mandates in socialist Europe to switch out all of their heating systems to these more efficient ones. So I would want to understand this better. The way you do that, you read all the public filings, you listen to the calls, you understand the government. And if they're riding that wave, it might be an interesting spec play. And thank you for pointing that out to listeners, Sven. Worth a look. Bob Johnson. Magna International, fourth largest auto supplier in the world. I think it's fine. I think a lot of the auto suppliers are going to benefit from the trends we're talking about in Cooper Standard. But I think the upside's a lot lower for this one, which is why we're in Cooper Standard. Probably the risk is a little bit higher in Cooper Standard. I mean, this really hasn't come off the boil. It's down 40%. For me, that's not interesting. I mean, at the most, I'm going to make 50% over the next 3 to 4 years to take risk in that business. For a cyclical business, 40, 50%, not interesting. For a cyclical business, I need multi-bagger, baby. Multi-bagger. MGA is not going to give it to me. But this is a sleep easy kind of stock. You're probably okay here. And good thinking and good pointing it out, Bob. So with that said, I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next week from Aventura. And in the meantime, make it a great one. Bye for now.